Hello, Cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 187 of Cyclocross Radio. It has been a minute since we've been with you, but we got back together. It's a Media Pit episode, and you know, one of the main reasons that I didn't feel comfortable putting out a show in the last couple of weeks is that with the state of where the U.S. is right now with the protests for racial equality and against police brutality continue to happen, it didn't seem like the right time to talk about cycling until we had something to say that was meaningful for the environment that we are in now. And with this episode, I think we do that. I invited Adam Austin, so friend of mine in the DC area, races on Crosshair Cycling, is an old school cycling podcaster when there were only like a handful of cycling podcasts out there. And Adam has a great take on what it's like to race as a person of color, not only in cyclocross, but on the road and as an amateur. And it's a great conversation. It is engaging the whole way through. So please don't be scared off of this. I understand that we are overwhelmed by this type of discussion right now. And the last thing that I want to do is add to the noise, because I think there are important voices out there that need to be heard. But at the same time, in the cycling sandbox, Black voices are few and far between, and we need to hear more from people like Adam Austin. Today's episode is brought to you by Works. Go to yourcleanbike.com, enter the code GEARUP, GEARUP, all caps. You're going to get 15% off all of the amazing tools that Works has to offer, from the Hydro Shot to the Pegasus multifunction work table, the Sidekick portable work table, the clamping jaw horse. Go check it out. This is the time. You got all those home projects you're still finishing up on before we get released from quarantine, and Works is going to make those projects easier. Go to yourcleanbike.com and enter the code GEARUP, GEARUP. Also, check out everything we got going on at the Wide Angle Podium Network, wideanglepodium.com. Become a member, help support the kind of content that we are putting out there, high quality cycling content. Go check out all the shows. Go check out the Slow Ride Podcast, episode 300. Amazing they made it that far. All right, let's get to our conversation. We got Adam Austin in the Media Pit. He's talking to myself and Zach and Michael, and we're doing that right now. All right, we are back. No racing back, but we're back. With us this week is a friend of mine, Adam Austin. Adam is a guy who I've wanted to have on the podcast for a while now. He's on Crosshair Cycling. You might know him on Twitter. He's Follow Adam. Had a podcast that I love, District Cycling Podcast? Is that the right
name?
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah. Yep. Years ago. Then the world just kind of went to hell, and I need to apologize to Adam ahead of time that I was like, dude, I want you here. I want you part of this conversation. Three white guys talking about what's going on in the world just doesn't cut it. So, but at the same time, I didn't want to be like, oh, I need to go ask my Black friend about what's going on in the world. And that just seemed horrible at the same time. But you were gracious enough to come on and sort of have this chat, you know, about the world in general, but also about cycling and race and how it's all going together. So, Adam, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the invite. And, you know, your timing couldn't have been better. It's not like I couldn't have been like, Bill, I'm too busy, like, you know, out doing stuff. You know, we're all in the house, so can't really do anything. But yeah, no, I've always liked the podcast, and you know, I told you I'm a little bit rusty. It's been a while since I've done this.
Yeah,
I literally had to dust the mic off.
That's amazing. But the podcast you guys had, and it was you and Greg, right? And then eventually Mike Creed somehow wormed his way onto the show too. How long ago was that? Is that, that's got to be like 8 or 9, 10 years ago at this point?
Yeah, about 11, 12 years ago, actually. Wow. Yeah, we ended the podcast. Well, it just ended. It's not like we had a formal like sign off or anything. In 2011, I think, was our last one. But yeah, no, it was a fun podcast that, you know, back before there were only like a handful of cycling podcasts.
Right.
There really weren't that many. And Greg started it by himself. So he was doing a few episodes, and then we met and decided to do it together. We got it going together for a while, and I'll never forget it. We were probably a good 20 episodes in, and Mike Creed just called. Pretty sure he was drunk, maybe.
I'm gonna say,
I remember,
yes.
Yeah, he was on his phone in the bathroom, if I remember right, on the first episode, and just was going on these long, hilarious rants, you know. And it, they had to, I can't go back and listen to that stuff, but it was definitely a good time. And then, you know, he went on to do his own podcast,
right? Yeah, you guys basically gave him his start.
Yeah, we did. He never credited us for that, but, you know, we don't hold that against him.
So what was the connection between you guys and Mike Creed? I mean, Mike Creed was my very first cycling podcast. I learned everything. Like, that was my entree into sort of like the cycling world and teams and the whole thing. And so what was the connection there?
I really don't know. Like, I'm not kidding when I say he just randomly like drunk dialed us. And I think Greg may have like reached out to him at some point. I don't know the connection, because at the time I think he was on Rock Racing.
Yeah, if I think I'm that's not, right.
He might have been on Rock, and then he moved over to Kelly Benefits or something. I can't remember the timeline, but he just had a lot of time on his hands. Because I think he may have been injured or something or another. But anyways, and I didn't, to be honest, I didn't know who he was. Like, I had no idea. And I was a pretty big, you know, I was a pretty big fan at that point. And Greg was like, oh no, this guy's like really good. I'm like, okay, man, I've never heard of him, you know? And yeah, he was great though. Cause like he got us some really great interviews because of his connections. I remember, and actually the next time, you know, we have crits and we can go see people race bikes. If I see Justin Williams, I'm pretty sure that we were the first podcast he ever came on.
That's awesome.
Nice.
We had him on. He was super young. Like, and I don't remember a lot of the content. I'm trying to dig it up, see if I can find it. But yeah, he was on. And we had him on. We had Rashan Bahati on. And so, yeah, we just had a really good time with it. But
that's awesome.
You know, it's gonna be back in the seat.
The other thing that I'm going to embarrass Adam with, also his other claim to fame from even before that, on the Discovery Channel,
yes,
Trek cycling event show, TV show, yeah. Was this like a contest winning? What's the whole story with that?
Yeah. So,
and remind us of the era that this all happened in.
Yeah. This was peak. Well, not peak Lance. It was like, he had just retired, and Discovery Channel was launching their HD channel, because, right, HD was a big thing,
yeah,
back in 2006, 2007, and they had this cycling reality show that they were pushing. It was like,
what?
Do you think you can ride the Tour de France? You know, Riding the Tour, Living the Dream was the name of the show. And I saw the commercial. They were looking for people to submit videos to be on the show. I'm like, I'll do it, you know, and I just recorded a video like in a conference room at work, sent it in. They called me like 2 weeks later. And then like a week after that, I was on the show. And it was, you know, it's like a cycling, like fantasy camp, right? So they flew us over to Spain, and we rode bikes with Tom Danielson and George Hincapie. You know, I got to sit at I went to Johan Bernil's house in Spain and, like, sat down with him, and, like, he called me fat on national TV, which was great.
Like, classy guy to the end.
Yeah, oh my god, that guy was a man. Anyways, yeah, and, you know, Chris Carmichael went out to Colorado, so it was like the greatest hits, right? And then we went to the tour, and we rode the hardest stage, so stage 16. I think this was the stage where Rasmussen in 2007 got kicked out. So there was, like, a ton of, like, press and just, like, craziness that day. But me and one other guy, yeah, my buddy Joe, we rode the stage, and they followed us with cameras. And I famously didn't finish it because I had literally only been riding a bike for about 6 months. Yeah, it was a great experience. It's on YouTube now, so you know,
we've got to check that out. I feel like that this is like this needs to be some rough draft material.
I think it might be. We might have to
believe me, I've got a lot of stories, but I don't want to bore people. But it was a good time.
I just hear about you going to Spain with Lance or Trek. I'm like, did you have to pay the 40,000? What didn't he, wasn't he doing a cycling
well,
camp?
That's or now had... this was, he got in there before the before the fees.
Yeah, I got in for free and I got free bikes out of it, so it was
that's
cool.
Awesome. That's like road rules for cycling or something.
That's exactly what it was. Exactly what it was. It was like, I'll never forget, they took me to the top of this mountain in Spain, and I'd never descended before. And they were like, okay, we just want you to go down the hill. I'd never done it before. And I was like, that was the moment where I realized they can kill you on television. You know, I was like thinking about all the waivers I signed.
Yeah, right.
And anyways, it's a good time. You know, got a lot of good memories from that.
How long did the show last? Like, were you only season?
Yeah, it was only one episode.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was like a 30 or... It was an hour show, maybe 30 minutes. I'm not really sure. The production on it, I thought was good. You know, it was so the other guy in the show, Joe Prano, was a more experienced cyclist. And so he crushed it. Like, you know, this was like dream come true for him. You know, I was just barely getting into the sport. We ended up really good friends, still friends now, still talk to each other. So.
Well, that's awesome.
And yep. it didn't scare you away from racing bikes after that?
You know, that got me into racing bikes, right? So, like, I had never done a bike race. And the first race that I did was that fall after the summer that I went to France for the Tour de France and then got hooked. Started cyclocross the following year. And yeah, man, that's what got me into it.
Yeah.
What were your feelings? So you started, you went to the tour, you know, doing like your first office park crit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I really want to race bikes. And then you like show up, you're like, oh, this is what bike racing really is. Not that fun Tour de France stuff.
Right. It was, it was, you know what though? It was, and my first race is at Greenbelt, and it's a local series that's been running here in the Mid-Atlantic forever. And I just liked, I liked the community, weird enough, right? I mean, I was I was comfortable in a weird way, right? Because I was definitely, I wasn't, and so we're pretty, like, here in the Mid-Atlantic, like, I'm not the only black person at a bike race, right? Like, you know, you show up and you're going to see a couple, right? Not a lot. But weirdly, I kind of felt like, okay, these are my people. Like I can, you know, I can do this. And, the show definitely kind of, you know, piqued my interest in racing. And, I figured, hey, this is something I can do now that I'm getting old and I'm not as athletic as I used to be. And, you know, it was a lot of angry people. It kind of reminded me of like pickup basketball, you know, it was just like, okay, same thing. It's just like, we're just riding around on bikes.
A lot of elbows.
Got to have a basketball reference if you're going to come.
I was going to say that you can see why Adam and I have a lot of stuff in common. And you, I mean, you even started. You were, you know, college athlete, right?
Yep. Oh gosh, yeah. So I went to college. Went to a historically black college, Bethune-Cookman College. It's a Division I AA school in Daytona Beach, Florida. I went on a football scholarship. couple weeks into the season, I got what I'm pretty sure was a concussion, and quit. I was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. But my dad was just like, well, how are you going to pay for school? And I had a good relationship with the athletic director, and he was like, hey, look, if you can make the golf team, then we'll give you a scholarship. Like, cool. Went home that summer, fucking played so much golf.
Did you ever play golf before that?
Barely. Like in high school, I saw an episode of the NBA Inside Stuff, and Michael Jordan was playing golf. And I was like, wait a minute, black people do that? And like good basketball players do that? Is that like the secret sauce? And so, you know, I just went out a few times with friends. But that summer I played so much golf, went back, made the team, finished out the 3 years on scholarship. So my first competitive 18 holes of golf was my first college tournament.
You like to start out big.
Yeah.
I guess so.
I was going to say, you were the cycling is the new golf before cycling was the new golf.
Yeah, totally. Oh, man. Totally. Yeah.
I tried out for the JV golf squad in like sophomore year in high school. It wasn't even like close. It was just like, go to the golf course and smoke joints. Like, because my talent was so lacking that it was just like, get out of class early and go to the golf course. Yeah.
I was on my basketball team in high school, we had two guys off there who went to play for Virginia Union, and the black guy off of our team who went there played golf for Virginia Union, and then the white guy was like the second ever basketball player who played. So that was our little role reversal in that one.
Yeah. Man, it's crazy. Like I got some crazy stories about being on a golf team at a historically black college, like, and playing in the South.
Oh, geez.
That was bananas. Like, absolutely crazy, you know, and playing other historically black colleges, but also playing like D1 schools. Like, our first tournament was against Florida State, you know, so yeah. We were literally thrown into it. And this was during the Tiger Woods boom. So you want to talk about eventually kind of like what draws like minorities like into these kind of like, you know, obscure, you know, non-traditional sports. It's just interesting kind of how we get in, you know, like for me, it was Michael Jordan and then Tiger Woods, right? Like, Tiger and I think are pretty close to the same age. He was in college when I was. And so that started the boom. And so, like, when I was out on the golf course, people were like, oh, cool, you're going to be like the next Tiger, you know? I'm just like, I'm not that good, you know? I've always picked, like, non-traditional sports. You know, I was a skater in high school, you know, and hung with that crew. I think it's just my oppositional nature always drew me to places where I didn't feel like necessarily people expected me to go. Right. My parents hated that I rode a skateboard. They're like, what are you doing? You know? But I'm like, you know, I don't see anybody else doing it. Why can't I do it? You know, kind of thing. So that's kind of been pretty, you know, consistent through my experiences with sports, you know. I'm better at mainstream sports just naturally, but I've enjoyed the non-traditional ones more. Yeah.
That kind of brings us with the to the world that we are in today. And yeah, we're recording this podcast, and I'm really happy, one, because I get to see you all, which we haven't done in a while. You know, we got the double whammy of COVID and then Black Lives Matter happening on top of that. It is a dynamic and really overwhelming time. But when all this is happening, and now that we're kind of through, I think almost this first phase, I was looking what you were talking about on social media, Adam, and there are a couple things, and I don't know really where to jump into this, but I think the main things I saw, and I think it's something that all of us who are not people of color are kind of dealing with, is what the hell do we do? What is our place in this? And I think that what I saw from you was like, hey, don't ask me if I'm okay. You know, I saw that frustration at first. It's like, look, this is, I haven't changed at all. I'm the same person I was, you know, since the day I was born. Right. It's everything around is starting all of a sudden, like there's a light bulb that's gone off.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I felt all of the emotions, right? It's like we're in the middle of a pandemic, so I'm already like literally afraid of my life, right? And then suddenly, like, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement just like exploded. And for me, it felt like I've been sick for 45 years in the hospital, right? And everyone showed up at the same time with flowers. They're like, hey, are you okay? Like, what can I do for you? You know, and it was just like, I can't. I just can't right now, you know? And it was, and so I was getting, and here's the thing. It's like, I never wanted to come off like I don't appreciate all of the people that reached out. Like, I'll remember that forever. But at the same time, there's this like weird kind of dissonance going on where I'm exhausted from all of it. And a lot of my feelings about what's going on are starting to resurface. Like, I'm like, okay, like I've gotten really good at compartmentalizing things, because otherwise you just hate everything. You know, it's like it becomes really difficult to enjoy just life if you're just kind of like digging in on everything. And so things started to slowly kind of come out. And so I was exhausted. It's kind of like going through the stages of grief. And then I got really angry. Right. And I didn't have a place to put my anger. And because we're all just like cooped up, my wife is just like, what the fuck is wrong mm-hmm. with you? You know, like, do you need a nap? You know, got a deal. And then of course I turned a lot of my attention to cycling, because that's what I love the most. And I started getting angry again, you know, and, I started getting angry over the responses that I was seeing from the community as far as like showing solidarity and how they were showing solidarity. And it's like, you know, and I debated like whether or not to even like voice my opinions on things, because, you know, growing up, I never felt like people listened to me, you know, and I'm a big fan of the Bomani Jones podcast on ESPN. Like, I feel like he's like my brother from like another, you know, I mean, I feel like he speaks to a lot of the issues that are important to me. And he said something that really resonated, in the sense that he was like, he said he felt like he's never been more listened to in his life than like right now, you know, and that just hit me. I was like, man, that's exactly what it feels like. And so it's like, okay, it's like you're rushing to get your notes together. You know, it's just like, I don't want to screw this up, right? Because traditionally we don't get a lot of opportunities, right? So we get these like small moments in time where something, you know, big happens, that there's an outcry and there's a lot of support, right? And then it just kind of, we get distracted with our lives and things kind of go away. And I think the moment for me where I just kind of like, I just kind of gave up was when Tamir Rice was shot. And I'm like, this is a kid in a park that got shot. And like, if America can't wake up over this, I buried so much like after that. Like I put it away. And I lost a lot of trust. And I remember having conversations with my friends. And it's like, I don't see the change that I'm hoping to happen. I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime, you know? And, you know, that's a hard thing. That's a hard realization to come to. And so, yeah, you know, when people are asking me how I'm doing, I'm just like, it's like everything. It's like all of the feelings, like, all at the same time, you know? And yeah, you know, so, but I appreciate people that are reaching out. I like the dialogue. I'm a little rusty, so it's like, I gotta like, you know, kind of brush things off. It's like, okay, like, here, you know, this is how we can move things forward, or this is how we need to acknowledge things. And, you know, I think in quarantine, so the thing with quarantine, it's also making us reflect a lot, right? Like, we're home and we're reflecting and we're thinking about our lives. And I found myself like going back in journals, going back through old emails. And the reason that I got, you know, to segue to the Trek thing, but, you know, that was one of the Twitter things that I went on. I thought back to a conversation, an email exchange that I had with John Burke. And I had emailed him a little while back, and I was like, hey, this was before like all of what's going on now. This was 2 years ago. I emailed him and I was like, I got a catalog in the mail. There was like no representation, right? I'm like flipping the pages. I'm like, this is ridiculous, right? And the bare minimum ask for me was like, can we at least have somebody that looks like me in this catalog that you expect me to buy something from? You know, and my kids were noticing it too. Like, that was another kind of thing. I was like, all right, I gotta, let me just guess his email, right? And send it, right? I guessed it. I got it right. I'm really good at that. And he forwarded my email to some marketing guy, and he reached out to me, and we had, you know, some back and forth. I don't want to get into too much detail, but I left the conversation like, okay, cool. He listened to me. Like, people don't generally listen, right? But I don't, like, looking back, I didn't feel like I asked for enough, right? I was like, could you just please put like some black people in your catalog? If you do that, cool, right? Like, you know, and I was just like, I'm looking back on that, and I was like, dude, what? You should have asked for more than that, you know? But I've just been used to trying not to make white people angry, right? And so, like, that's kind of like the default setting that I've been, especially now, trying to kind of like get out of, you know? And so I think that's what's led to a lot of the conversations that you're seeing, you know, from people.
Yeah, yeah. I think part of it too, you brought up the COVID, you know, that we're in the middle of that. And that was kind of my struggle with it, is that the way I think a lot of us, myself included, especially with like creating content and doing everything else with COVID, was like, let's get through this. Let's just get our minds off it. Let's get distractions and let's just get through this. And then when this came up, you know, with George Floyd getting murdered and everything that followed, it's like, that's not the right mindset, but I can see people falling into that as well. Let's get through this. And then it's back to business as usual. And this is sort of, I mean, kind of what you're hitting on, is that we've just sort of been on that merry-go-round for too long.
Forever, right? It's like, the thing that I'm most afraid of now, and I get a lot of anxiety over, is the distractions, right? And the routines of life coming back, and what that's going to do to a lot of the focus right now, and a lot of the progress, right? Yeah. And so, you know, we're seeing progress. We're seeing, you know, people talking and more importantly, people listening. But it's like, I see like the news of the NBA, like maybe coming back, or I guess they're coming back, but a lot of the players don't want to come back. It's like really weird. And so I'm excited about that because I love the NBA, right? But at the same time, I'm like, dog, we don't need the NBA right now. Like, you know, can we like put that off till like November? You know, just like, can we get a little bit more out of this moment? And so, you know, it's weird because I feel like we're in a place now where everybody can focus on something finally. It's unfortunate.
But even and the parallel there, even with what we're seeing with COVID-19, is that people are getting tired of that, but it's not changing either. You know, people are still dying. People are still getting sick. Yet it's like, okay, let's just move on to something else. And that's kind of the kind of scary parallel that we're seeing.
You know what's interesting about that is, so during this pandemic, we're all faced with like this this threat to our lives, literally, right? And you know, I was talking to my wife about this, and you know, I was like, I've been afraid of the police for a long time, right? I'm terrified of being like pulled over, and having this fear of my life, I'm like, well, finally, people are gonna like. Everyone's going to know what it's like to be afraid for your life, right? And we're all in this moment. And so the kind of parallels there are just so interesting. I'm like, like, you guys, like, you know what it feels like. There's this thing out there that could kill you, you know? Like, that should drive you to, like, want to do something. And so we're all kind of in this. There's a certain way that we can empathize with each other, I think, now that I just don't see those parallels being drawn enough right now. You know, it's like a way that I can connect. It's like, look, you're worried about your parents' life, right? Well, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Black males are afraid of their kids for their kids' lives. You know, it's this weird kind of like, we're all kind of in this thing where, you know, we're thinking about immortality, you know, and I don't know. It's everything happening the way that it's happening is interesting. And seeing it through the lens of, you know, I've got two kids, two boys that they're worried about me. You know, my oldest is 7 and he's legitimately scared and worried about me. And he's figured it out, right? He's figured out kind of what's going on. He understands the issues with the police, and it's hard for him to understand because he sees things in black and white. It's like, police are the good guys, bad guys are the bad guys, you know? And then he's like, wait a minute, they're not going to treat you the same the way that they would treat. So my wife is white. So they're like, they're not going to treat you the same way they're going to treat mommy, you know? And I'm just like, oh, you know, it's like, I knew that was coming, but it's like, when you sit down and you hear it, it's just like, you know, you tell him like, you don't have to be worried, but inside I'm like, no man, like you really do need to be worried, you know? And there's so many complexities. So my kids, they present white. Like if you saw my children, you would not think they were my children. Like, I mean, if you like put us like really close to you, like, yeah, okay. Yeah. That's his dad. But my kids are blonde hair and green eyes. Right. And very, very, they present white, like, and so that creates its own kind of like the way that they're going to discover their identity is a little bit different. But it's just hard, man. Like when your kids, like, you know, they don't want to do anything bad at home or when we're out because they're afraid someone's going to call the cops, you know? And they're like, well, okay, we're okay if mommy's with us. Right. Oof. But if it's just dad, like, we're worried, you know? And I don't know, man, like that's a hard thing. So, you know, when I think about where I want to see this all end up, you know, I'm hoping, you know, that at some point kind of like that gets lifted, man. I just can't imagine what that would feel like not to have to think about that, you know? So sorry guys. I know that was kind of heavy.
No, that's, no. I think that's the conversation we want
to
have.
Good to listen.
So here's something I actually wanted to get your thoughts on. We had this incident in the D.C. area on the Capitol Crescent trail, which is this trail that basically runs through Maryland and D.C. Oh, does it go to Virginia, too? I don't know if it goes to Virginia.
Nah.
Yeah, just Maryland into D.C. And these white teenagers, even though they looked much younger, they were actually teenagers, were putting up these flyers basically against police brutality and, you know, in support of Black Lives Matter. And this guy came up to them on a bike, and assaulted them. I mean, he grabbed the flyers out of one girl's hands, you know, basically putting his hands on her and then like basically, you know, threw his bike at while holding it. Parallel to what we're seeing with the police doing into another guy and got away. And it was awful. And in the tracking down of who did it, we had a couple people who Twittered, went out and investigated and decided that they were most likely the culprits and put their information on Twitter. One guy who was just, you know, and it's this fascinating story because the first guy that they thought it was just this guy that rode that trail but and had the exact same glasses as the guy who assaulted these teenagers. So people went after him first, and it turned out that he was conservative. So the first thing he was doing when he saw this mob coming after him online was he started deleting pro-Trump tweets. Which then everybody was like, well, obviously the guy who did it.
Right.
And like, his name got all out there.
Yeah.
Crazier than that was the second guy who is this?
I couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe the way the story turned.
Yeah. I tracked down the starting tweet because it just I just had to know where this started. I'm actually going to see if I can find it. But basically, it was they decided the guy who did this looked like a cop. Somebody went through photos of local police departments and found somebody who looked similar to the guy who did the assault and found somebody remarkably similar. There was no Strava data that this guy was on the trail. There's no information that this guy even knows how to ride a bike.
Wow.
But his name was out there as the guy that did it. And it fit everybody's narrative that he was a cop. So obviously he was the guy who must have done it. Turns out he wasn't. It was some third guy that they also found on Strava. So the weird part of the story is Twitter actually did find the guy, but the people who found him did not put his name out there, and then he was later arrested. But fascinating story we could do a whole show on. The part that I want to get, because I've gone back and forth on this, the guys whose names were out there, who were doxxed, who did not do it, the response from, and I will say this because a lot of the people I saw who I knew, predominantly white people on Twitter, was like, well, you're now you know what a black man feels like to be accused of this, and you know, just because of the way he looks and this kind of stuff. And
wow,
yeah. And my thought was like, that's kind of screwed up. That's not it at all, because this guy, as awful as it is, you know, the Twitter mob herd has passed by. And we don't even know who those people are anymore. And they had some crappy days, and it was wrong. And they got all this stuff like put on them, and they had to go through all this crap. But at the end of the day, they're back to just being white guys, you know. And that's when I was like, this is like the wrong response, and it's not really a parallel. But that was like the parallel, you know, universe that people were saying, like, oh, well, this guy was wrongly accused of this because the way he likes, just like black men are. And I'm like, it's bigger than that.
No, that's not it. Yeah. Right? Like, I can tell you, man, it's like, you know, when it's, you know, it's like, I like to talk a lot about, like, I just have this, like, spidey sense radar, like, when people are looking at me or assuming certain things about me. And the thing that's, I mean, obviously there's some obvious things that are just false equivalents there, right? But, you know, the thing that's that's hard to explain is, once you leave, so say I like in a grocery store and the people are like following me around, which that's happened more times than I can remember, right? You leave those situations, and because these things happen so much, they start to get normalized inside of you. Like, you just don't even, they kind of just come in and they come out, you know? And it's not until I'm like hanging around some of my white friends, they're just like, yo, did that bother you? You know? And I'm like, nah, man, you know, it's fine. Whatever. Like, let's like let it go. And so I think with a lot of, you know, with a lot of black folks, it's like this accumulation of just like, this is just the way, you know, folks are going to see us, you know? And then we also kind of go through this thing where we wear so many different hats, right? Like, I'm actually looking forward to like when my kids get to see me hang around some of my college friends, because they're just going to be like, who is this dude? You know, like, what? Like, I've never heard dad use those words before. Like, what does that mean? You know, so, and, you know, and it's not to say that I'm not my authentic self around my children. Like, I am, but it's just like, in order to kind of like maneuver, for me anyway, I'm not going to speak for all black because I can't. In my experience, the only way that I've found to be able to kind of maneuver through life is just I wear so many different hats. You know, it's like go to work, got to talk a certain way, right? On interview, got to say the certain kind of words, right? It's like if I go to church, if I go to a white church, this is the way I act. If I go to a black church, this is the way I act, you know? And so you kind of just get to a point where it's exhausting. And so I think that's when all of this culminated. The exhaustion that set in, I think, was the result of just so much, like, I'm tired of switching all the time, you know? And gosh, what would that feel like if I didn't have to do that? You know, and it's led to some great conversations with my wife. And, you know, she's been great to kind of talk through all this because, you know, she can see it, like, you know, kind of like the emotions kind of going through. And, you know, and, she, you know, it's like I'm just trying to imagine what it would like to be able to take that weight off. Right. And, you know, I was watching an interview with Steven Jackson, the former NBA player. He's been really, you know, at the front of the movement. And a reporter asked him, they were like, hey, so what does freedom look like to you? Right. And he looked at the reporter and was just like, I don't know. I've never had it. You know, like, you tell me what it looks like. And that just hit me. And I was like, oh, my God. Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah. And, you know, like that, I think that's the thing right now when I'm seeing everything happening, I'm seeing the people doing some awesome things to raise money and to really be allies in this. You know, it means a lot but it's also very difficult for me to communicate what exactly it is I want out of this. You know, like, what does it look like? What's it going to feel like? Shit, I don't know. I've never had it. Right. You know, and so, and I may never have it. Maybe my kids or my kids' kids, whatever. So I think when, you know, you hear a lot of black folks talking about how tired they are, I assume a lot of this fatigue is just, you know, we switch so much, you know. And to kind of bring this a little bit back to bike racing and just like bikes in general, you know, you're seeing, I've been very interested in, I've been following Aisha McGowan a lot, and I really appreciate her voice right now. And, you know, her voice and really pushing representation. And, every time she gets like some media attention, like I'm all over it. I'm like, this is amazing. And the reason that it's amazing is like her message is awesome. Right. But for me as a black person, it just feels good to hear someone talk about things that would make me feel that would bring me into the sport and into the community in a way that I feel better about it, you know. And she just speaks to those issues that, you know, are important. And you know, it's just good to have folks like her out there that are really putting in the work, you know.
So you kind of touched on something I wanted to ask about that you talked about earlier. I think you were during cyclocross season, you know, you were talking about Celine Alvarado and kind of what it meant to have her be world champion. And, you know, you talked about Justin Williams. I've been following partly because of Zwift racing, because Corey's been getting so into Zwift racing. Yeah, I've been following them. You talked about Aisha McGowan, and you know, I remember getting introduced to her. There was, I think it was Hennessy did a commercial or like a short film about Major Taylor.
Yeah.
And that she talked, and I was just blown away by how, you know, to your point, you know, what I think as white people, like, we don't necessarily know this, you know, for you, you have kids, you know, what does that, you know, representation mean, and why is it important?
Yeah, it's so I'm sure scholars can speak a lot more intelligently about it. So I'll just come at it just from like a, how does it feel when I'm sitting on the couch and I saw Celine Alvarado like win the world championship?
Yeah.
That was fucking incredible. Like it was, it was like, man, it was, so there's a lot of those kinds of experiences. So I remember watching the Washington football team win a Super Bowl with Doug Williams as black quarterback. And that was a big deal. Like, I was a little kid. I was like, oh my God, like black quarterback, like Super Bowl, like champion, you know? And so the thing that you just get a lot of pride, like, it's like cool. See somebody that looks like you do something great, you know, especially in cyclocross. Right. And it's like, I feel like I held back a lot that season in talking about what was going on, because I'm like, yo, do y'all see what's going on? Like, there's a black woman like winning cyclocross races.
Yeah.
She's only one out there. Right. And so I started like digging and trying to find some media on her. Like, what's her story? Like, what's her family like life living over there? You know, she's, gosh, where is she from?
Barbados?
Dominican. No, she's Dominican from the Dominican.
Republic. Yeah, okay. Dominican Republic, right. And so, you know, I'm like, how bizarre is that? And she found her way to cyclocross, and she's like this fucking Serena Williams, you know what I mean? Like, just sticking it to folks. And it's just like, for me, it was just very emotional. Like, and I'll never forget, my youngest at the time was five. Yeah, he was four when this, maybe he was five. He's watching it, and he loves to watch cyclocross with me. So he's watching the world, and he loves the world champion. Like, that's the world champion. First of all, he doesn't understand why Katie Compton is not the world champion, because he doesn't get it. Because she, for so long, for pretty much all of his life, she was the national champion, which is like,
yeah,
she's wearing the flag. So to a little kid, that's awesome, right? And so I literally had to say, no, Theo, like, Katie's not the world champion. But anyways, so he saw Selena Alvarado, and he said to me, he was like, Daddy, she looks like you, you know? That's and cool. It was just, man, so, Zach, to kind of answer your question, for me, it's just, man, it just makes you feel good, you know? And it makes you feel good on one hand, but on the other hand, I'll be honest, it made me nervous, because I was worried about the way it was going to be talked about. Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for you guys, even you guys, like, I love your podcast, but I was nervous. Like, when you guys were getting ready to start talking about it, I was like, oh man, like, I really like you guys. I hope you don't mess up, because I know it's a lot of pressure. You don't want to say the wrong thing, you know?
Did we say the right things?
Yeah, no, it was good. It was all okay. Good. Like, I, you know, there wasn't anything that stuck out that I was like, oh, man, I shouldn't have said that, you know. But I was nervous, you know.
Because yeah, for sure.
I enjoy what you guys do, and I consume a lot of media. I love Cyclocross Magazine, and I follow, like, all of the, you know, everything. And so, you know, but to the representation point, Zach, it's like, when you don't have the diversity of voices, right, you end up being concerned. It's like, well, are we going to talk about it the right way? And I don't know if I would talk about it the right way either, right?
Yeah.
But there are certain viewpoints that I feel like are missing right now to kind of, like, really solidify how important that was, you know? And she doesn't put herself out in that way at all. And so we're really kind of left with, like, this vacuum almost.
She does, which I do appreciate. She does seem to identify more Dominican than Dutch, which is a good thing.
Yeah, and her family, oh my gosh, there's a really great article, I think it was on Sporza, and I had to Google translate it, about just her home life.
Yeah.
And it was just incredible, like, what, you know, the way that her family, like, works together, you know, to really support her. And I think, you know, that is, that's just something that you see a lot in our community, and it really does take a village, you know. And in her case, you're just seeing it literally, you know.
Oh yeah. At the start line, it's like her sister and her mother, and you know, which is commonplace for Belgian and Dutch, you know, cyclocross in general. But it's just, it's kind of cool to have that different aspect to it, you know, with her family.
Right. And I'd love to, like, hear from her, just, like, you know, she's young, right? So I'm always a little, like, you know, I'm my expectations are different for young people, right? Because they're figuring out their lives, right? Yeah. They're not in a place where they can think about complex issues in the way that somebody's a little bit older. But I do kind of wonder, you know, it's just like, what's it like? You know, like, I mean, I've been to Belgium and...
Right, yeah. I mean, it's like, it's just the thing, like, it's a big deal for her as a woman of color in cyclocross, but also, like, it's in Europe, you know? I mean... Right. Where blackface, they had blackface at a cross race. I guess was it Zwarte Piet or whatever is this this figure, right? Yeah. So just that she's there, you know. In the States, it's a little more. It's obviously it's a completely different picture. So yeah, like that's even a bigger like hurdle that she's crossed.
Yeah, yeah. I would just love to hear from her like about that experience, you know. And I would imagine at some point in her career. She may get, you know, a little bit more comfortable about talking about, you know, those kinds of things. I would hope that she does, because I do think that, you know, she's a pioneer, right? And her story is really important. And I hope that it's unfortunate that who knows what cyclocross season is going to look like this year, but that we won't have the kind of traditional opportunities to kind of like explore that more with her as a world champion, you know? And, you know, yeah, so it's...
And her talent's so immense, like that, like she has the, she could become sort of, you know, move past just cyclocross and be a mountain bike star and sort of just grow her, you know, stardom, right? Like, and that's pretty cool. And
well, that's what excited me about where she was, seemed to be going next, you know, especially being on Vanderpool's team, that she also was going to start jumping into these World Cup mountain bike races. And as much as we love cyclocross, that's just a step above as far as exposure and as far as the world stage and, you know, potential Olympics and everything else. And if we have a you know, person of color who's racing mountain bikes, I think that's even more, you know, more crucial. And even go, I mean, I know Adam, you were looking like just sort of like peeping the Instagram of mountain bikers out there, seeing if anybody was going to say anything about what's happening in the US and Black Lives Matter and just racial equality, brutality, any of it. And it was pretty silent.
Yeah, it was crickets, man. Like I started to write them down. Right. I was like, all of the people that at least felt like, I was like, okay, you know, like, you know, I can tell you care and you're saying our things, but man, you know, so I was like, I had to get out of that. Like, that just wasn't good for where my head was at. But I'll say one more thing about, you know, Alvarado. The thing that she also spotlights is like, she is the only one. Like, there's like, I'm trying to imagine like a sports moment where, you know, like a modern, like in modern times, right? Where, I mean, you look at Serena and Venus, right? There were other people of color competitors, not many, but there were others, you know? And so the thing that just struck me about Alvarado is like, guys, she's the only one.
Yeah.
You know, like, and there's already pressure. At least I've always felt pressure that I've always felt like I've had to just be better than everybody in order just to kind of be average, you know, like that was just something my parents always told me. It's just like, look, sorry, but you're just gonna have to try a lot harder than everybody else just to get what you think you might want. And so I'd imagine there's a little bit of that in her, but to kind of see her win the way she does is just like, you know, she really puts a spotlight on it. Like, she's it, you know, like you look across that start line and she's the only one.
Yep.
You know, and
she's a kid. She wasn't even her. She was a U23.
Right. So I don't know. Her brother races too.
Yeah.
So
it's a
racing family, which is awesome. But
I guess I had another point to, you know, in terms of us on our podcast, you know, I think part of what we missed is the importance of the moment. You know, I think that in a way, right, we're able to say, well, hey, we're three white dudes and it's all about the bike racing. You know, I think we can do that too with like, I look at like Justin Williams. It's like, oh, he's a phenomenal bike racer. He's a national champ. Like, but it means something more. Like, there's clearly more meaning that, like, we're either not able to speak to or understand. And it seems like, to your point, like, the lack of diversity, I see it with, you know, women. There's no women in media either. Right. You know, it's, I saw it at Cyclocross Magazine. It was like every person who was doing it was, you know, Valo News, it was all dudes.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a very good point. But, you know, also, I guess looking forward, you're talking about Tiger. All right, you know, kind of like a one-off, like Serena and Venus. You know, there were a few others, but we're kind of looking at these singular people. From your experience, you talked about going to bike races in the cycling community. What about what worked in terms of making you feel welcome in that scene? And because I feel like we'd be better off if there were more yous, right?
Yeah.
Like, instead of just having to focus on the one-off, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was at Trek Cup, the World Cup this past year, and good buddy of mine, Ryan, we had a really good conversation, and he was like, in a certain way, he was asking, he's like, dude, how did you get here? You know, like, how did you get, like, to be a part of this group, you know? And I had never really thought about it in that sense, but I'll say this, like, it hasn't always been welcoming, right? So, you know, my second year racing cross, I had a guy call me, sling a really nasty racial slur at me at a cyclocross race. And I filed a complaint with USA Cycling. And kind of going through that process, man, like, if it were another me, I don't know. Like, you have to really love it to, like, you know, take it that step. You know, it's like, you know what? I'm not going to go beat this guy up, right? I probably would have if I didn't have kids, but that's, hey, you know, like, that's my natural kind of limiter, I guess. And, you know, I thought really hard about filing the complaint. And I learned a lot about, like, who the people were that were kind of allies for me, right? When I filed that complaint, and Bill was great, because I think that was the first year that I was on the Crosshairs team. And the prior team that I was on, they were great. I could tell that they were allies. They kind of had my back. So in that moment, I was like, okay, there's clearly some jerks here that don't want me, like, or feel like, you know, that I shouldn't be a part of this, you know, community. But I think we're unique. And I think that geographically, because we're such a big country, there's so much nuance, right? So, like, here in the mid-Atlantic, you go to cross races, you go to DCX, you're going to see people of color. Like, that's just, you know, like, you're not going to see a lot, but you're going to see enough that you don't feel like an alien, you know? Whereas if I know I've been other places where I felt that way. At Trek Cup, I totally felt like an alien. Like, I'm not kidding when I say I started to just look around. Like, I felt like I probably was the only one there. I'm not kidding. And now, granted, I know it's Waterloo, Wisconsin, right? I know that it was pouring rain, right? And not to put any, like, stereotypes out there, but us folks don't like hanging out, like, in that crazy shit, right? It was just nasty, right? It's like the joke I like to make, and I'm amongst friends, so I can say this. It's like, when I'm in situations like that, I'm like, I look around, it's like, God, I need more black friends. You know, like, right? It's just like, because I wouldn't be suffering through this. Like, why am I out here? You know? But yeah, no, I think, you know, so in that case, like, I didn't feel welcome. Like, I mean, I felt welcome, right? Like, people weren't just like, hey, go away, you know? You know, I felt like they were fans and we were watching a sporting event, it was fine. But I left that event, like, really down, you know? And I contrast that against my experience at Louisville Worlds, right? And there were a few black people there, only because I knew it, because a couple of them were my friends, right? So, you know, it was a slightly different experience. But when you're kind of, like, in a place where you're just like, all right, am I the only one, you know, that that's a really messed up feeling. Like, it's just like, you know, it's like, all right, so if I'm the only one, you know, it just, I don't know, man, it just brings you down. Because I love cyclocross. Like, I mean, I flew out to Wisconsin to go to that, like, basically a day trip. Like, I flew in the night before. I left that day, right? And so stood out there in the rain, like, cheered everybody on, like, super fan. But looking in that environment, that shouldn't have happened, right? Like, I shouldn't be there. There's no reason that there's nothing. There's no effort to bring me into me into that type of space. And that's where I'm hoping, you know, the conversations that we're having lead to people, one, acknowledging that that's a problem, right? Yeah. And then two, like, really starting to talk about how we can make that better, you know, and agreeing that that type of diversity would help the sport, because not everybody believes that, right? And so, you know, that's so, you know, to answer your question, like, those are the contrasting kind of, like, you know, kind of things. And I feel like a lot of this is regional, but we're just like a weird sport too, you know. It's like, what's the ultimate frisbee crowd like? I don't know. Never done it. Like, is anybody like?
I mean, I'll just leave this as a comment, and you know, I won't demand that you answer it or whatever. But it's interesting that you bring that up. I raced Celestia. You know, I used to live in Wisconsin, and basically the scene there is Madison, which is incredibly white, but yeah. There is Milwaukee. Half of our scene is Milwaukee. It turns out to be very suburban, or, you know, younger, wealthier, right, white people or whatever. But there is, half of our races are in Milwaukee. And so on Saturday, I'd race in Wisconsin. It would be 300, you know, white people. And I go to Chicago and race on Sunday. And I know that they have, like, a strong Major Taylor program there. Mm-hmm. And especially at the junior level, like, there was diversity, and it's great. I love being a part of that. And so to me is just, I think part of it is figuring out, you know, building to me is like that infrastructure of how do we build these clubs to get where you have, you know, maybe some people like yourself being an influence for young, you know, young people of color and make it accessible. So it was kind of interesting, and you are 100% right about Wisconsin, and it's a major problem. Mm-hmm. But you, even for me, I could see it on a weekendly basis between whether I raced in Wisconsin or I went down to Chicago, and it just, it was a neat thing. It was noticeable and it was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, we're a weird sport in the sense that there are gatekeepers, right? And there's a lot of barriers to entry that, you know, we've talked a lot. I know you guys have talked a lot about on the podcast, right? And I'm encouraged by seeing a lot of those junior programs. I mean, I know there's a couple here in the air in our region. And so that's encouraging. I've, you know, again, it's like, if you want to bring more folks under the tent, you got to have more people outside that are like greeting folks that look like the people you want to bring in, you know? And so it's like, so that I think on a basic level is kind of like what you need to see. And so, and, you know, so cycling is unique. And, you know, if you listen to, you know, Justin Williams and Corey Williams kind of talk about their experience growing up in South Central, it's like, you don't want to wear the kit, right? Like, cause it's just, you know, there's a lot of, you know, kind of culture hoops that you got to jump through too, you know? And, but in the same token, I've always felt like, and this is where I'm excited about, like, what Justin and Corey are doing, but I love what they're doing. But at the same time, I'm like, it's only two of them, right? Like, that's it. I mean, that's not it on the crit scene, right? But from an elite level, from individuals that have big followings and a lot of influence, like, they're it. And I'm worried about them, right? Because I don't want them to mess it up. But I know that that's a ridiculous expectation to have on them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I am really afraid that they're going to say the wrong thing on social, or something's going to happen, and then everybody's going to be like, oh, see, shouldn't have gave them the money, you know, gave them their own team, I'm ripping up my jersey. And then, you know, it looks like it used to look, right? And so, you know, I'm really excited about what they're doing. But man, as a black person right now, like that loves and is a fan of the sport, you also are just like, man, I want you guys to succeed. But man, I'm really afraid. I don't want y'all to mess it up, you know? And that's why we need more. That's why we need more folks like in this sport pushing it forward, because they're inspiring. Those my kids watch them, and I joke about this, and I think I said a message to Justin. I was like, look, my youngest eats vegetables because he thinks he's going to be fast like you.
That's awesome.
Like,
that's great.
I'm not kidding. Like, that kid, he goes outside, he's riding laps around the parking lot, racing every kid in the neighborhood, and he is Justin Williams. Right?
That's really cool.
And yeah. So, you know, that makes a big impact, you know, and they had a great podcast. I can't remember which one they were. I don't want to plug other podcasts.
But no, it's fine.
Yeah, I don't remember. They've had a lot more presence lately, but they were talking about kind of like the idea of the poster right on the wall, like your sports hero, you know. And in cycling, we don't really have that. And so they're like good examples of some, you know, that can kind of, you know, some like people in the sport that kids can get behind. Like, I'm kidding, I'm not kidding that my kids love them, but I know my kids love them because they look like me, right? And they see how excited I get when they win. You know, we were at the national championships, the Crit National Championships this past year, and my God, it was the happiest, like, you know, I think, Bill, you might have saw my kids like running up and down like the finish straight, like after they won. It's like, no, get off the course. You know,
I was actually doing a stand up for USA Cycling for the show, and it was like Adam's. Anyway, I just kept pausing because Adam's kids just like ripping up and down the finish line, posting up after they won the race.
Yeah, they were super excited, and so. You know, coming back to the poster thing, I actually made a poster for my youngest for his birthday. His birthday is coming up. I took a bunch of photos of Justin, put them together in a really cool poster, and they're going to sign it for him, and you're going to put it on his wall.
Awesome.
So he gets the poster on the wall, right?
That's great.
But I think a lot of kids kind of need that, you know?
Yeah.
And they're good examples. But it's just two of them, you know?
Yeah. So to finish this up, you know, we sort of mentioned it a little bit, and I think mainly with Trek Bikes and their involvement with selling police bikes was a huge issue that was all over social media. But as a result of that, and everybody was kind of waiting on them. I mean, they're one of the giants in the industry. Not to mention giant, but the titans in the industry.
I like one of the big four, right?
Yeah, okay. But they people were kind of waiting to see what their response was, and they finally did come out with something, this all in proposal that they have, that I think, like everything else, is going to get criticized, but at the very least, it's something out there. But Adam, you were somebody who I think did a really nice lawyerly job of going through what they proposed on social media and kind of breaking it down. And just really, what is it that you saw? And I saw that you had a really nice response to them. And what is it that you kind of were hoping for and think that maybe they could do a better job focusing on to really make an impact for change?
Yeah, I think, you know, so first off, like I was upset with what I was seeing because I like Trek, right?
Right.
Well, I have six Trek bikes in my house right now, six.
You know? Wow.
And so I was coming at it from that angle, right? And so I was a little upset. And the thing that I think I thought a lot about this. The thing that really upset me the most was the first response was completely tone deaf, in my opinion. And I think in the moment, I just needed people to say, hey, y'all, like, this should have been more important to us. it hasn't been like, you know, for us, they're a bike company, right? So my expectations, like, you know, like I keep them in the right place. But at the same time, it's like, you know, just say, hey, we're listening. This is a problem. We're part of the problem. We've been complicit, you know, and we want to listen. So like, we're going to bring in people that really know how to solve these problems and can really help us move forward, because there's so many people out there that are doing this work, and it's not that hard to find them, yeah. You know? And that's what I was hoping to see. And so when I saw the, hey, here's a chapter from my book, you know, and talking about the income inequalities, and I don't want to get too deep on that, but I'm like, you can't start that chapter without talking about how wealth has been accumulated in this country. If you don't want to start there, then you're not talking to me, yeah. You know? And I was like, I know that that was like a little thing to kind of zero in on, but I was just like, you're not coming to the table like fair and honest, you know? And that's really what I was hoping. And it's not just Trek. I could say the same thing about Specialized. And like, I feel like I really don't want to get into like the brand kind of like bashing, but
sure. Yeah.
You know, it's I just want people to come to the table like fair and honest, you know, and that requires a lot of introspection. It requires a lot of, hey, how come I didn't speak up sooner? It requires a lot of transparency, right? And so I shouldn't have to spend 2.5 hours on Google figuring out who's your board, right? Or who the executives are in your company and what they look like. You know, I'm like trying to figure out, I was like, okay, who came up with this plan? Right? Like, who were the people that were at the table? Because that's very important, you know, and I should be able to go to a website and see what your company looks like. You know, who are the people that are representing your brand, you know? And so I was frustrated with that, you know? And so that just led to just like, all right, let me get a few things out about this. It was like, I was like, oh, this is a detailed plan. Okay. This requires a detailed response. And then I, you know, and so my expectations are, and I think this is with the cycling community at large, and there's people doing awesome stuff out there, right? It's just to come to the table like fair and honest, you know? It's like, hey, man, I'm here to listen. I've had people reach out to me to want to talk on the phone about how they can move things forward. And that means a lot. Like, that shows that, and not in a public way, right? That shows that you're genuinely interested. And so, I don't know what they're going to learn about it. And I don't want to turn this into like a long, like corporate responsibility kind of like discussion, but there's, let's just say like, there's a lot of opportunity, I think, for them to correct their path. I hope they do. And I hope they can find people that can help them do that. Yeah. You know, because the folks that are making the decisions right now just aren't the right people to make that decision. And that's leadership 101, right? Know what you're good at. Right. And can't figure it out yourself, find people that can do it for you. And if they care about me and the bike community, I think at large cares about me, then they'll do that. You know, they'll take the extra step. And I hope they do, because I feel like I'm at a weird place where it's just like, OK, now it's in my crosshairs again. No pun there, you know, and I want to see what's going to happen. You know, and I don't want to fall out of love with this, but it could happen. I hope it doesn't. But, you know, I think we're in kind of like that moment right now where, you know, I hope some good things happen. But it was awesome seeing the Legion team raise $100,000. That was great. I can't wait to see what they do with that. I hope that just kind of like pushes things forward a little bit more. And, you know, we need more of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that there are grassroots efforts out there. There have always been, and there are people doing, as you said, there are people doing good work, but we need more of that. And I think the fear is just like what we were talking about before, is just making sure that it doesn't, you know, people's attention spans don't just sort of waver and move away once time has passed. And I think that's kind of the key component here, is to kind of keep our foot on the pedal.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, you know, and that's one of the good points you made, Adam, was that, and this is what I kind of took from it, was like Trek's response is sort of like, kind of follows this sort of like white savior complex where we're going to go and fix this problem, as opposed to what are the people on the ground doing that are already there, and I'm going to listen to what they need, and then we're going to help them. And like, that's what I took from that. And sort of like, that is, I think, super important to like, how do we make sure like that, like companies like that understand that and like are like not, as someone else said, like not taking their efforts and doubling up what someone else is doing and taking away resources, but just backing them up. Right. So yeah, I like to see Trek do that, but you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard work. There's great orgs out there that are doing it. I hope that, you know, there's enough pressure that stays on, you know, them, and not just them. It's like, it's everybody.
Everybody.
But I am really excited about what I'm seeing with a lot of the individual athletes. So like what Tobin is doing, I guess that ridiculous ride. I think he did it today. Does anybody know?
I was hoping to get him to sort of pop into this recording. I think we're going to talk to him soon, but you know, I was pretty stoked on that as well. Lane Mayer also doing it. He actually started this page that you can go to that has all of these, I think it's big rides for big causes, that has all that people can just kind of list their ride and their cause that they're riding for. So that's kind of cool. And at least it's doing something.
Yeah. Hats off to them, man. And I appreciated both of their candor. Like, they were really honest and upfront about why this was important to them. And that's just, man, that just feels good to see that. And so, yeah, hopefully, you know, and I know that's hard to be an athlete in this sport with sponsors, you know, and to kind of put yourself out there. You know, it's hard. Like, I work for, you know, a company, and I can't just, you know, put on my company shirt and go out and say whatever I want, as much as, you know, the issues may be important to me. So I respect the athletes that are out there, you know, really supporting the cause. So.
I think that like cyclists, we're really good at routines and like training plans and like setting goals and doing what needs to be to achieve them. And like sort of like trying to realize for myself, how do I stay connected to these like issues that I want to be involved with and I think are important, but how do I also sort of not be on Twitter for 24 hours a day to like catch up with the latest breaking news and like know, like constantly know what is happening all the time. And it's like, I already have like systems in place, and this sounds cheesy, and I'm just like, I just thought of it like while we're talking. It's like, you can apply your training like methodology towards sort of like civic engagement, like an hour a day, right? Like an email a week. Like there are ways that we're our minds are already set up for that. So let's bring some of these other things into our sort of like daily habits. I don't know. It's something I've been thinking about as I'm wanting to like move forward and like be more engaged and like, and not just fall into the like just move on. Like, okay, it happened. And then, but here's the bread I'm baking. Here's my lunch. Here's my bike on a fucking bridge. You know, like here's a sunset. Like there's a place for all that, but like, there is a place for actually like contributing to society like in more meaningful ways. So
there's a lot of opportunity there, and it's like I've had so many of my friends reach out, and I feel like one of the things I've been saying a lot is like read.
Yeah,
you know, like read more. There's so much great material out there. Yeah. You know, like a good place to start. It's like, man, you don't have to be out on the street corner with the Black Lives Matter sign, right? You can go to go to Amazon and pick up a book about how to be an anti-racist, you know, like there's, you know, and that's an easy place to start. And so, you know, I think that it'll be interesting to kind of see, you know, once people start to kind of uncover, you know, how privilege works and, you know, all the structures, you know, and all, and the way the systems are set up to support certain people and not to support others, it just at a certain point you just can't, you have to try to ignore it, right? And I think that's been my issue with a lot of athletes that haven't said anything, in a, you know, in a, it's a weird thing. It's like sometimes I expect, sometimes I don't. But like to not say anything at this point, you kind of have to like really try.
Yeah.
You know, and it has to, there's, the movement is so big. It just has to be it a little bit at the front of your mind. And so I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. I get, like I said at the beginning, I'm worried for like when we get like basketball and football and movies and all that stuff back, you know, because then I think our conversations might be a little bit different, but we'll see.
Yeah. Adam, thank you so much. This was a great conversation. Really appreciate you coming on and being passionate and frank and honest. That was nice. Thank you.
Nah, man, I really appreciate it. Like I you know, I hope that folks can learn something here and, you know, keep talking about it, right?
Yeah.
And you know, that's important to me, and I'm big fans of what you guys do, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, you're the old podcast pro, so I want to show and listen to it.
You know what? It's like good luck trying. It's kind of like
I googled earlier. Tries like Adam Austin Michael Creed podcast. I couldn't find it.
Nope. Yeah, it's kind of like what's that punk band that like Death, right?
Right.
That's us.
Yeah. in 30 years you're going to be famous.
Yep. That's we're waiting.
I'm just kind of disappointed you didn't lock down a like a mattress sponsor or whatever was hip at the time, right? You know, to make it a big thing. Gosh. You were ahead of the curve, man.
yeah. No sponsors, man. Not at that point. Well, no, that's not true. We had people send us like free stuff, which was just hilarious because we didn't know what to do with it.
Right.
Like, we get all this stuff. We're like, okay, we're going to have a contest. And then, like, we never follow through with it. We were the worst. We were so unprofessional.
Nothing has changed.
Oh, my God. Awesome.
Great.
Yeah, it's great to meet you though, man. Thanks so much for coming in the media pit, I guess as we call it. It's been super interesting to hear your perspective.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Hopefully I can see you guys in real life at some point.
As you know, materials in cyclocross are very important. What do you think, Mr. Sven Nys?
Very important to have the good material when it's frozen, when it's dry, when it's summer, when it's wet. The tires are very important. It's all about technique. It's all about the good material.
So we brought the Bike Shop Show back with a cyclocross focus. Same great format, new name, Bike Shop CX. Give it a listen. I think you'll dig it. Each week, Mr. David Palin and I talk about things that go on at our bike shop. We talk about things that go on in the pro cyclocross pit at all the big races around the country. Sometimes we have industry-leading guests on the show. Sometimes it's just the two of us yapping. If you're at all interested in cyclocross, I think you'll like it. The Bike Shop is open.